church basically has one primary task, and that is to make disciples. That's easy enough to say, but it's much harder to do. I think a lot of churches through the years have satisfied themselves with making church members and not necessarily disciples. Now, church members can be disciples, but a lot of times churches emphasize getting people's name on a church roll, but don't bother trying to help them become disciples. And there's a difference between merely a church member and being a disciple. So what is a disciple? Well, I think Paul tells us in Romans chapter 8, verse 29, he doesn't use the word disciple, he used the word those whom God has chosen or foreknown. We all know Romans 8, 28. We know that God works all things together for good to those who are called according to his purpose, those whom he loves. And we often stop reading at verse 28 because it is such a verse of comfort and encouragement to us. But Paul kept writing. And in verse 29, he says there's a reason that God has called these people and loved these people, and that is that they might become conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. A disciple is one who is working intentionally at becoming conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. That's why we've developed this pathway to discipleship. We want to figure out how we can do things better, not just to have church members, but to build and grow disciples. Now, when you become a Christian, you start that process of becoming Christ-like. But the Bible tells us very clearly, becoming a Christian is like being born all over again. When a baby is born, it's 100% human, but it's got a long way to go before it's grown up and mature. And quite often when people become Christian, they start off spiritually as babies, to use that analogy. And it's a matter of growing up and becoming like Christ. That's our goal, to become like Christ. So we're putting this pathway together to try to figure out what kind of strategies, what kind of programs, what can we do as a church to make disciples, not just church members. Now, as you know, I hope you know by now, our dream in the next 5 years is to reach 1% of the 11,000+ people who live within a 10-mile radius of our church building. We're not interested in adding these 1% of people just as church members. Our goal needs to be to help them become disciples of Jesus Christ. Church membership is fine, I'm all for it, but becoming a disciple is much more important. And if we can help people grow in becoming a disciple of Jesus Christ, conform to the image of Christ, we're doing our task as a church. So with that in mind, I think there are three questions that we need to consider this morning. The first one is, how much like Jesus am I? This is a question each of us need to ask on occasion. How much like Jesus, how conformed to the image of Jesus Christ am I at this stage in my Christian walk? Now, maybe to help us figure that one out, because that's a difficult question to answer, here's another one that's got a little bit more going for it as far as answering. Am I more like Jesus now than I was when I started my Christian journey? Am I becoming more and more conformed to the image of Jesus Christ? It's not a physical image. We don't have to look like a I'll get it in a moment. We don't have to look like a Mediterranean Jew. That's not what Paul is talking about. But what we are to develop in our Christian life is the attitudes that Jesus had. We need to look at people as Jesus looked at people. We need to talk with people as Jesus talked with people. We'll never do the miracles that Jesus did, but we can love people as Jesus. I'm more like Jesus now than I was when I started my spiritual journey? That's a significant question. But one I think that's even more important than these two is this one. How much like Jesus do I really want to be? As we look at the Gospels and see how Jesus was, see how he was totally in tune with God's will for his life, see how he lived his life every day asking this simple question, what does the Father want me to do? Because Jesus told us on at least one occasion, I only do what the Father tells me to do. I only say what the Father tells me to say. If we are becoming conformed to the image of Jesus Christ, that means we've got to work at hearing what God has to say to us and say to him, I will do that. But sometimes I think we put a limit on how much like Christ we want to become. Yeah, I know Christ wants me to think this way, but I don't want to. I know Christ wants me to have this attitude toward people, but I'd rather have my own. I know this is what God wants me to do, but nah, that's not for me. And sometimes we put a limit. We set the limit on how much like Christ we want to be, and that's going to affect how much like Christ we become and how we make that progress week to week, month to month, year to year. We're probably not going to see much change in one day or even one week or one month, but it's over time that we see these changes. I remember when our first daughter was born, Jan's parents lived about 3 hours away from us, and they would come down every 6 to 8 weeks as they were able to visit to see their granddaughter. We just happened to live there. You know how that works. And I remember Jan's dad saying practically every visit, boy, she has surely changed since I last saw her. Now, you know, we saw the girl every day. We didn't see any change at all. Day to day, it's the same girl. She looks just like she did the last time we were here. Then we started looking at the movies that we took. Here's a movie when Jan's dad was holding her. 8 weeks later, here's another part of the movie where Jan's dad is holding her. You know what? She really changed in those 8 weeks. You know how that works. Day to day, we were with her every day. We never saw that change. But somebody that hadn't seen her every day, wasn't spending all their time with her, they noticed the change. That's the way it is in becoming like Christ. We may not even notice the changes that are taking place because we see ourselves every day. We are with ourselves every day. And unfortunately, we tend to focus on the failures every day. Sometimes it takes someone else looking at us. My, you're so much more like Christ than the last time I recall being with you. What a great thing to have someone say. So our goal with these 115 or so new people is not just to get church members. We want to develop plans and programs and strategies that not just for them, but for all of us. Help all of us move closer in becoming conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. That's our task, to make disciples. And so as we work on that process, one of the plans we have in this pathway to discipleship is the importance of serving. Now again, let me remind you as we look at this pathway, these are not isolated sections where first you're in connect, and then when you're done connecting, then you move to grow, and then when you're done growing, then you move to serve, and then when you're done serving, then you move to share. When you're done sharing, I guess you die. I don't know. It's not that neatly divided. People who are in the connection stage are also going to be growing. And people in the growing stage are going to be serving. And people in all these stages, we hope, are going to be sharing. So we're going to be in several stages of this at one time. It's not like we can chuck off, well, I finished first grade, then I go to second grade. Well, I finished second grade, now I'll move on. I've done connection. just couldn't figure out how to make a diagram that had arrows from everything. It wound up being just a solid black circle because it's all arrows. So we had this other diagram to make it look neater, but just remember, it's not that neat. We're all supposed to be in several of these paths, several of these steps at one time. Last week, I talked about connect. We want to figure out ways that we can help people connect with our church. We want to help people connect with Jesus Christ to begin that walk of following him and becoming like him. And we want to help people connect with their calling, with what God has prepared them to do. Beginning before they were ever born, God began working in us and preparing us for something or several things that he wants us to do. And he hasn't really made it a mystery. He's given us a gender. He's given us a personality. He's given us natural talents and abilities. He's given us desires. He's given us skills that we've learned and things that we've picked up along the way. You put all of those together, and God says, you find something to do putting all of those together. That's what I've prepared you to do. Not a whole lot of mystery there. But we've made it difficult. So we're going to talk today about serve. I know it's number three in the process. Grow follows connect, but Brandon's going to preach about grow, and he's in Las Vegas this weekend. Well, he's on his way. I guess after not having vacation for 3 years, he and Jessica decided they're going. And so God bless them. And he didn't take any money from the offering to try to build, you know, put all that aside. It's just he and Jessica going out, and they've got a good week planned. And I hope they enjoy it. Brandon, if you're watching, enjoy. We'll try not to be jealous. Alan, maybe you don't want to go to Las Vegas. Well, that's his business. So next week, Brandon will talk about grow as part of this process. But today I want to talk about serve. And maybe one question to ask is this. Why serve? Now, what's the big deal about serving? Well, I think to fit all of this together, one reason we need to serve is because it helps us imitate Jesus. If we're to become like Jesus, to develop his attitudes and his approach to life, one of the things that he really did well was he served. You go back all the way in the Old Testament to the prophet Isaiah. And along about the last third of Isaiah, of his book, he develops this theme of the suffering servant. He says the Messiah who comes is going to be a suffering servant. Now, that's not the idea the Jews had in mind. The Jews, by the time Jesus came, were expecting a conquering general who's going to drive the Romans out and reestablish Israel as an empire. That's what they were looking for. But God said, no, my Messiah is going to be a suffering servant. And when Jesus came to earth, in Matthew chapter 20, verse 28, he told his disciples this. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Now, we can't give our lives as a ransom for many. Jesus already did that. No one else can do what he did. But we can come to serve. In fact, in John chapter 13, Jesus gives us the perfect illustration of the kind of service he's talking about. In John 13, it's the night before his crucifixion. He's having a dinner with his apostles. And they're all gathered around the table. You know, they didn't sit in chairs with their feet under the table. They laid on cots or couches, and their heads toward the table and their feet away from the table on the couch. And it says, as they were eating, Jesus laid aside his garments, wrapped a towel around him, poured water into a basin, and went around and washed each of his disciples' feet. then they had the animals pulling the carts and the animals hauling the cargo and sometimes people riding animals through those same streets. And we're old enough to understand. Animals leave deposits behind, don't they? You get that mixed in with the mud and people walking in these streets with the mud and all the other stuff that's there. You get to somebody's house, your feet probably are not only dirty, they probably stink because of that mixture of stuff in the streets. And it was common in those days, if you were going to invite people to your house for a dinner or for some event, you would have someone there whose job was to wash their feet before they walked into your house. I mean, just putting a mat says, welcome, please wipe your feet, that wasn't going to do it. So they would have someone who would wash the feet of the people coming into their house to enjoy the evening. And you knew if someone ever called you or hired you to wash someone's feet, that was the lowest of the low jobs. If you were a household servant and someone said to you, you got feet washing duty tonight, you have to think, I must have done something really bad to get that job. Nobody wanted to wash feet. And yet Jesus took that role and washed his disciples' feet. And then in John 13:15, he says this, I have given you an example to follow. Now what we've done with that is we've made foot washing, some churches have made foot washing a part of their Easter pageantry. Jesus washed his disciples' feet sometimes as they're doing a play of Jesus and disciples, have Jesus wash the disciples' feet on the play. Sometimes a preacher might want to make a special point to the congregation, so on a particular Sunday, he may call the elders up on stage and have them sit. He may call some other people up on stage, and then he will go through the process of taking off their shoes and socks and wash their feet. A lot of us, if we were invited, probably say, you're not touching my feet. That's our attitude. But we've so focused on washing feet once a year that we've forgotten what Jesus is talking about. The example was not necessarily, well, you've got to wash feet. The example was, you've got to be willing to do the lowest of the low tasks, whatever that is, because that's the service that Jesus did. And we are to imitate him in our service. So what is it that you consider a task that's below you? To imitate Christ, that's what we need to be willing to do. That's the kind of servant he was. He served people who were not just like him, although he did also serve people who were just like him. He served Jews, he served Gentiles. He served the religious elite of his day, and he served the outcasts of his day. Jesus was a servant. He came to serve, not to be served. And if we're going to imitate Jesus, we've got to learn to be servants. Now, how did Jesus serve? Basically, you'd say everything he did was to meet a need. If there was a need, Jesus would meet it. Again, he did things that we can't do. We can't go out and touch blind people and they can see. We can't touch the ears of deaf people and they can hear. We can't take 5 loaves and 2 fish and multiply it and feed 5,000 people and have 12 baskets left over. We can't do those sorts of things. But we can show compassion and we can show love to people in need. We can find places that somebody ought to do something. Maybe Jesus is calling you to do it. He met a need. When we get to serving as a church, we want to look at opportunities to serve both within the church and opportunities to serve outside the church. Now, I don't have time this morning to go through a whole list of all the places we could use people to serve. I started writing down a list and ran out of room after 2 or 3 papers. Now, they were small papers, but I ran out of room and said, okay, we've got more things people can do than we have people right now. But as we start adding these 115, boy, we're going to put them to work. there's places to serve. Let me just mention a few right now in case you're thinking, I'd like to serve. What do you need done? Well, we have a young adult class that meets in the basement downstairs, and the reason they meet down there is there's no one right now to watch the nursery during Sunday school. And so the parents are watching their own kids. You know, kids interrupt things. They don't really have it's hard to have a full lesson when you got nursery kids. Some of them can walk and run and do all those things. Mom, Mom, I hardly ever call for Dad, but Mom, we could use somebody or several somebody to say, you know, I like kids. I can work in a nursery during Sunday school. It's a need. Is it for everybody? No, some of us don't have the personality to work with kids nursery age. But others do. Look around, we have communion served every Sunday. Back before COVID, we have different people who would take a month at a time to prepare communion. During COVID, that's gone by the wayside. But somebody has to serve, or somebody has to prepare communion every week. Maybe you're the kind of person that you could come in earlier on Sunday morning, put the cups out, put the bread in, fill the cups from downstairs, pull them up, bring them up, set the communion around, put the boxes where they go. Oh, they're usually there anyhow. Could you do it once a month? Could you do it a month at a time? It's a need. Now, somebody's currently doing it along with 3 or 4 or 10 other jobs. It's something, it's not the most, let's just say, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to prepare communion. Can you count? Can you pour? Can you clean up afterwards? Can you throw the dirty things away? I don't want to downplay it and say it's a nothing job. It's an important job because we depend on it being here. And suppose somebody says, I'm not going to serve communion. I'm not going to prepare communion. Suppose everybody had that attitude. We'd come time to the communion, and the person would give us the meditation and prayer, and we look, there's nothing there. Why not? Well, nobody did it. If you can do it once a month at a time, hey, we can work a schedule around it and let you know when your time is up. That's just another example. Is that really difficult? I don't know. I've never done it. But it's something that needs to be done. It's a need that we have. I talked last week about the possibility of a parking lot brigade. Guys standing around with umbrellas waiting on a rainy day to help people get from their car to the front door. It doesn't have to be just guests. It can be anybody. Who likes to get out of their car? You know, when you get out of your car with an umbrella, you get wet before you get the umbrella up. That's just the way it works. If you walk under your own umbrella back to the car, what do you do with a wet umbrella once you get in the car? You get soaked either way. What if we had people who say, well, let me hold the umbrella for you and walk them across? Or we had people that were willing to again, hang around till they're needed to escort people across snowy, sleety, icy parking lots if we don't get it all cleaned. That's a need. And people can serve that need. To have people greet at the door. To direct people where they need to go or want to go and help them find what they need here. It's a need. To do that is service. Would Jesus help someone across the street with holding an umbrella for them? Probably. He washed disciples' feet. Holding an umbrella is not that low. Would Jesus work in the nursery and change dirty diapers? Probably. That may be as close to foot washing as we get these days, is changing dirty diapers. But hey, it's not for everybody, but it might be for somebody. So begin thinking about things that are done here every week and ask yourself the question, I wonder who does that? And I wonder if that's something I could help with. It's just meeting needs. And then we go beyond our own services and beyond ourselves and get out into the community. What can we do to serve our community? We've done some things in the past that have helped serve. mentioned several times, somebody said one time along the way, if you want to make an impact in your community, find an itch and figure out how to scratch it. Just find something in the community that nobody else is addressing and figure out, is that something we can do to serve our community? There may be things in our community that are scratching. And we may not know it yet, but let's figure out how to find out what's itching in our community. And is that something we can scratch? Do we have people who would be willing to have that kind of service for Christ? Another reason I think we need to serve is just simply reduce barriers. There's a lot of people out in our community who have bad impressions, bad feelings about the church, because the only thing they know about the church is what they see in the news and in television shows and movies. And let's face it, the news and television shows and the movies are not kind to churches. They almost always picture churches as fanatical, anti-everything. They hate everything. They think every church is whatever that something Borough Baptist Church was, that protested funerals. They think every church is like that. As we get involved in serving the community, one of the things it shows is these people care. It helps break down that barrier that people have built up. I can't go to church. Those are really weird, negative, nasty, terrible, anti-everything people. But when they find us scratching their itches, they're going to have to conclude, these people care. What's different about these people? They love us. Everybody else ignores us. These people actually love us and are trying their best to make our lives better. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure there are itches in our community that we could begin to scratch little by little to show our community we really do care beyond the walls of this church. So I have one final question, and I don't like it. It's wrong. I worked with this question several times, and this is what I came up with on the slide, and then I realized this is a bad question. The question is not, would you like to serve? The real question is, how would you like to serve? If you're wanting to become like Jesus, serving is not really an option. The option is, how will I do it? You may have something in mind that we never thought of. You know, I think I could do this, or, you know, why doesn't somebody do this? Well, are you somebody? There might be something you know of that we don't do here, or something we do. You know, I can help with that. There's a card in front of most of you. Some of you might have to reach behind and get the pew behind you. There are cards in there. Write your name on that card, and below write, I would like to serve in this way. Tell us what you'd like to do. And put that card in the offering box. Just drop it right in. Or you might be sitting there thinking to yourself, I don't know what to do, but I'm willing to do something. So write your name and say, help me find a way to serve. We will. We'll do our best to help you find a way to serve. You may not know exactly what yet, but we'll help you figure out, well, we know what your gender is. We'll help you figure out your personality type if you need to know that. We'll talk about different options for service. Just write, help me find a place to serve. Now, here's the thing I think that's true about Jesus and what he's looking for in us. If you're breathing, he wants you to serve. We don't retire from serving Christ. Now, we may do different things. We may not be able to do at 80 what we did at 35, but that's all right. God's okay with that. He's equipped us to do things at 80 that maybe we couldn't even do at 35, and he equipped us to do things at 35 we can't do at 55. Our lives, our bodies change. I understand help me find a way to serve. I mean, with technology, you could live 500 miles away from here, but we can help you find a way to serve. Service is part of becoming like Christ. And I truly believe the more we become a serving church, and the more we enable people that we start to reach in the next 5 years, the more we encourage and challenge and enable them to become part of a serving church, it's going to make a tremendous difference in our community. Now, not everybody's going to like it. Not everybody liked the fact that Jesus served. They ultimately killed him. I don't know that they'll kill us, but that's not our concern. Our concern is, am I becoming more like Christ? And is my service part of the evidence that shows I am becoming more like Christ? So think about this question. Pray about this question. How would you like to serve Christ through this church? Would you pray with me? Father, we understand you never called anyone to sit. You called us to serve. And I have no doubt that most everyone